Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
What do you want to talk about? I'm out of ideas.
Should we talk about your outfit? I know we're not on Facebook Live, but you are wearing one hell of an outfit.
Yeah, let me explain it to you, Tim. There is no Facebook Live today because Sky... The idiots at Sky, I mean, I'm not going to go into it now, but they have failed.
You're not moaning about Stuart Barnes again, are you?
Oh my God, Stuart Barnes. Stuart Barnes right now is the best thing that Sky has to offer because their service on broadband is so abysmal. It is so. If you work for Sky and listening to this, you're abysmal, right? But the plus side to not having Sky Fibre Max broadband not in your house is the fact that I'm literally dressed like a Slavic plumber.
You're wearing
dirty white sleeveless cotton beater.
Yeah, horrendous fitting cotton wife beater as well.
Yeah, it's and then there's some like tracksuit pants.
They're halfway between pajamas and jogging bottoms.
Yeah,
and I'm not quite sure on which camp they quite fall.
It's a weekend then of strong looks, JB, because the picture on Twitter, at Rugby Podcast, where you can find us on Twitter, of you in that strong Doctor... It was Doctor Who-esque hat.
Mate.
Is what a few Twitter
that is
comments
my,
were.
That is my rugby look. Do you know who the Red Baron is?
No.
Is he a World War One
correct
fighter, German fighter,
yeah, so,
pilot?
Yeah, so I always wear my rugby hat to watch rugby, whether it's professionally... Or if it's down at Sock H, the Red Baron used to paint his fighter plane red, so all the other pilots would get encouragement that he was there and he was easily spotted. I wear my hat to give the lads encouragement because I'm there. Therefore, I'm easily spotted.
Very good.
That's exactly
right.
What I do.
So you're looking sharp. Let's hope your chat is as sharp on this podcast then.
All right. Well, after that anecdote, I doubt it. Hands in, then, boys. Pod on three. One, two, three.
Pod.
Hello and welcome to the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. I'm JB, joined in studio with Phil. Hello, Phil.
Hello, JB.
And live from the Egg Chasers TMO shipping container, it's Tim.
Hello, JB. Hello, Phil.
Hello, Tim.
And how are you today, mate? What are you doing down in London? You are in London, are you?
Sorry?
You are in London, are you?
Yeah. I've had the family down this weekend and did all the Christmas lights, Regent Street, Hamleys, Carnaby Street, all that.
Wow, yes. all that BT money, hey? Go.
You got it.
All right, well, what have we got on the show today? Obviously, England, Australia, and of course, this is the international version of the podcast, the midweek domestic podcast. We'll do immediately after this for Wednesday, I think.
Yeah, England, Australia. We're going to be posing some questions. We've got a new game from Tim,
ooh,
which I'm very excited about.
Well, listen, probably the best known and most loved game we've ever done on the podcast until now was JB's inspired Nazi war criminal or Springbok.
It's trademarked. Springbok or Nazi war criminal. And actually,
I apologise.
And actually, it should not even be called that. It should be called Springbok and or Nazi war criminal.
Well, I have a new game which is inspired by our Australian brethren, and I think you're going to like it.
Excellent.
I'm looking forward to that. We're also going to discuss the bonus points in the Six Nations, and we're going to look ahead to kind of bookend the Autumn Internationals. We're going to look ahead to the Lions next year.
Mm. Yes. I've got a review here, boys, on iTunes. Please leave your 5-star reviews. Other star ratings are available, but I'm mentioning these because they're 5-star reviews. So thank you very much. Tanny Fuga Fanboy, who says, cracking pod, keeping me up to date on Ellis Genge's latest shenanigans and in touch with long-distance mates as we discuss JB's sale obsession and the fact Scotland is always discussed last. And then Rugby PT says, cutting edge insight and differing opinions on all areas of rugby, including players' social media, Hask level banter flying about,
yes,
and a real emphasis on the correct pronunciation of New Zealand players' names. Great binter, bro.
Yeah. We're normally quite good at New Zealand, although the accent's terrible. Our South African pronunciation really needs some work.
I've actually been told off by someone from South Africa about my pronunciation.
Yeah, it's embarrassing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's fine.
We're getting better, though.
I'm actually not. So did you all watch the game?
I watched it live.
Did you? I did not watch the game.
Did you not?
I watched it live in a pub on my own. In a pub, Belushi's Bar in... just near London Bridge, just opposite Borough Market. So, yeah.
Oh, nice.
Great atmosphere.
Any salty kiss?
I did not touch any if there was any salty kiss there, obviously. I know better than that.
Vile. What did we think of the game then?
What were your impressions, Tim?
Awful first 20 minutes. Like, diabolically bad from England.
Yeah,
and I think I tweeted out that it feels like England are in a video game at the minute on challenge mode, where the last game it was, your challenge now is to beat Argentina with 14 men, and then your challenge now is 60 minutes to go and you're 10-0 down against Australia, turn things around.
Yeah.
That's how it felt. Awful.
I really enjoyed that tweet. I thought that's exactly set the scene perfectly. I mean, that first 15, 20 minutes, exactly what we said last week was, if Australia get fast front football, they use those two big centres to get over the gain line, and then they use their potent runners out wide, they'll be incredibly dangerous. And that first 20 minutes and their period of dominance in the second half, that's exactly what they did.
Mm.
And after 20 minutes, I thought it was over. I thought England had no way of coming back because they didn't even look like playing. But kind of, they got the bounce of a ball, they got the Kepu drop ball, which Farrell and Joseph pounced on. So they got a bit of luck, and they also had a bit of luck at the other end, where they had the disallowed tries from...
Yeah, that's a good point, actually.
A couple from Kurundrani, with the Pocock hit on Farrell, and then held up over the line. And they kind of limped into half-time, only 3 points down, despite not having much of the ball, not playing any good rugby.
Well, that's, I think, why they are a good team, though, isn't it? Because they're always in striking distance.
Yeah. And the way they turned it around in the second half, they were exceptional for virtually all of the second half.
That said, I think we should look at... If you actually just dig into it a little bit deeper, Australia handed over quite a lot of points to England through errors, interceptions, drop balls, which then got kicked through. And then they didn't, again, as has been the problem with their whole autumn, they didn't take their chances. And also, where do you stand on Marlon Yard's try? Because I think there's a lot of Aussies upset that was a knock-on with his left hand before he placed it with his right hand.
Correct decision for me. I think it did go forward. And the way that the TMO justified it was that his left hand was in contact the whole time. And I'm not sure it was, but I think his right hand hits it as it hits the floor. Slightly just before. Yeah, so the correct decision, although I think the TMO got there in a slightly wonky manner.
Hmm. Forward pass for another one of the tries?
Yes, there was a few forward passes not given for England, but I can't remember which try it was.
I think that this run of form, this run of games that they've had, has been simply incredible. And it does... I'm so conflicted now on the whole Lancaster thing. Like, did Lancaster build this foundation? Or was he completely inept? Which is why he failed so badly.
He definitely built the foundations. I'm convinced of that.
Really?
They're the same players. They were well coached. I think what Lancaster missed was the last few percentage, which is selection and strategy. And he just didn't, because he didn't have that, it never fell into place. As soon as you get someone like Eddie Jones, who's got that selection and strategy.
Yeah, but are they the same players? Because, you know, the captain didn't even get in the team.
Only in the World Cup. For the whole of the rest of the time, Hartley was in and around the team.
It's a really tricky one for me.
I think Lancaster did 95% of things correct. Unfortunately, in professional sport, 95% correct is the same as being wrong.
Yeah, well, I'm not entirely sure I agree with your analysis, purely because this team is so much different to the Lancaster teams. I don't know if I've ever mentioned culture before, but like all the cultural nonsense, well, we won't go into that. Into that again, but the way that they play, they've almost like, it's weird that under an Australian coach they've embraced that kind of English hardness up front.
Yeah,
and actually that should have been the identity that they had with Lancaster from the start, but he tried to reinvent it and take it into a completely different way.
You always try and get back to Lancaster, don't you?
I've not spoke about Lancaster for about six months.
Right, I've got a question for you two.
Go on then, fire away.
If everyone is fit and firing, if Billy's back, if Haskell's back, and everyone else is available, who would Eddie Jones' starting back row be, including the bench?
Ooh.
So I want your 3+ bench.
I'm going to be boring. I'm going to say it's Haskell, Billy, and Rob Shaw.
With who on the bench?
Clifford.
Clifford, okay. Tim?
I apologise. Thanks to Sky. I'm missing patchy bits of that, so repeat the question, Phil.
Bloody Sky. The question is, if everyone's back and fit, who is Eddie Jones' starting back row and who is the bench? So I need four names.
Right, yeah. Billy V, Big Billy V, obviously.
Yeah.
Chris Robshaw's earned that sixth shirt. I think if fit in the Six Nations, he would pick Haskell, but I personally wouldn't.
Who would you go for then?
Yeah, why would you not pick Haskell?
I think with form of the second rows... Sorry?
Why would you not pick the Haskell?
Why would I not pick... Just in terms of the evolution of England, I think there's players that can do that same job and offer more. And actually,
who?
I've been massively impressed with how good England's second row are, and I just don't know if I wouldn't mind Launchbury over Haskell and therefore Marrow in the back row.
That's interesting.
That is interesting.
I don't think you're far wrong there, actually, because there has been rumblings of Marrow moving to 7 of all places.
Which does seem quite incredible.
Yeah.
I
know it sounds like I'm just saying this because I've interviewed him before, but I honestly think next year Carl Ferns will come into that England team. And he might be squad.
Yeah. I think he will.
I think he's going to be the perfect 7 for that system.
But also, do you know who else I think could be the perfect 7 in that system?
Go on.
Don Armand.
That's not a bad shout.
It's not, and he played with the Saxons in South Africa.
He plays all across the back row, so he's a good bench player as well.
Mm-hmm. He can even play lock as well. Yeah, that's maybe not a bad shout.
Where do we stand on? There's a guy who's been playing recently, and he's been getting a lot of starts. On Jacob Rowan.
The Gloucester 7. Is he more of a 6?
I don't know. Well,
6-7.
From what I understand, did this lad captain...
He was seven for Leeds, for Yorkshire County.
Yeah, did he captain them?
He was captain there.
Was he?
Yeah, so he's captained them. And that's no mean feat when you're such a young lad. And then he's gone to Gloucester. Now, I don't know what the situation of Kvezic is. I can only assume that he's injured. Because otherwise he's been dropped for, what, a 20-year-old. So he must be up to something.
Well, Jacob Rowan is 26.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
He's a lot older than I thought then.
Yeah.
And I think possibly well, there's one, all the rumours. I mean, Kvesic is gone. It just hasn't been. Obviously, no players talk to other clubs till January the 1st. But on January the 1st, I'm sure Matt Kvesic will have a very quick conversation with Exeter.
Yeah.
So there's obviously that involved. And also, maybe David Humphreys has seen what we've seen for the last few years.
The penalty. Well, it isn't Kvesic's fault. I've mentioned this many, many times. It's England's fault. England are at fault here because if Kvesic had the reputation of an England player, he'd be allowed to cheat. The only reason that McCaw can cheat and Pocock can cheat and Hooper can cheat is because they are McCaw, Hooper and Pocock.
They are seasoned international players.
Exactly. If they got Kvesic into the team and built a big song and dance about him, I think he'd be just as good as those guys. Be on the wrong side of the rucks and referee, oh, it's fine. It's Kvesic. He knows exactly what he's doing. Who am I to intervene?
Yeah.
here's a little stat for you. No, I was looking at the bill, and this has been a record-breaking year for Australia. Why has it been a record-breaking year for Australia,
It has
boys?
To be losses, right?
Most losses in a calendar year?
Exactly that.
Is that right?
That's awesome.
Yeah, the most losses of any international team in a calendar year, 9.
Would it be
most losses of any international team?
Is that right?
Yes.
Wow. Do you know what we
mean? Maybe that's tier one, or maybe there's not enough games that other teams play where you could rack up 9 defeats.
No, I don't think there's a tier two nation with 9 defeats, purely because they'll be playing other tier two nations.
Well, the only one would be Italy, because they would lose 5, but then I guess they don't play as many games, and they tend to...
They lost to Tonga, but they beat South Africa.
Yeah, but then they lost... Yeah, so... Wow.
And no other team has conceded as many points in a calendar year.
Wow. That's
the cool. The only little thing to mention is that was 3 games against New Zealand and 4 against England since the World Cup.
And yeah, they played... I think they played 15 matches this year.
Now.
Which is a lot.
It's probably a good time to remind ourselves what the Aussie press... thought of their chances prior to the England tour. Would you like to hear that advert, lads?
Oh, let's see what we can do.
I've got it right here.
Oh, have you? Go on.
Meanwhile, England rugby coach Eddie Jones has said it would be a failure if we don't win the series.
I love this.
They've never even beaten Australia in Queensland. Remember 98?
I remember 98.
Did you see this advert when it came out?
Yeah.
It's amazing. That's so smug. I love the laughing.
Inspired by England, it's onwards and upwards for the Wallabies. You guys know what's unreal?
Rolling England, Twickenham, 1991 World Cup final.
Yeah, that and the look on all those English faces last year.
I just wonder what they'll do when they get here without an ex-rugby league playing scapegoat.
Peak Teo.
Wowza.
But he looks a decent international centre off the bench.
He does.
Tell you what.
He does.
talk about having to eat your words.
About Peak Teo.
Well, no, that actually.
Oh, that yeah.
That video. But I did have a thought about Teo.
Go on.
Well, he's in the England squad basically because he's the only person. This comes back to one of my other theories. It's incredibly hard to play international centre at... It's incredibly hard to play inside centre at international level to the point it's almost impossible. I think there's only 2 people in all of England that can do it. One happens to be Ben Teo and the other happens to be Manu. And that's it. That's why he's there.
Plus then Farrell.
No.
Well, Farrell can do it.
No. No, Farrell plays fly half. In a 12 shirt. He isn't a traditional 12. That's my point.
He's definitely not a traditional 12.
Only a very small handful of players can actually do the traditional 12 role now.
Yeah.
Because it's so difficult. So, yeah.
I like Rhys Hodge.
Yeah.
Yeah, what is Rhys Hodge? I mean, I know he's in the 12 shirt, but I don't think he played much 12 for his club.
I know he's played a bit all over the back line. He's one of these kind of multifaceted Australian backs, isn't he?
Mm. Yeah, he looks like he might be like the solution for their 12 shirt, though, for quite a number of years, or at least just in that team.
He's got that Latham look about him, hasn't he? Long, rangy runner, socks down.
Yeah.
He's tall, but he's quite slim. And he's doing a job at 12.
Mm.
The one thing I would say about Australia is and Southern Hemisphere teams in general, is Southern Hemisphere sides always tend to be in tune with the World Cup. And if you're going to have a terrible season, better to have one straight after a World Cup. Because England have got to try and keep building or sustaining, or building and then sustaining for three more years before it really matters.
Yeah.
Well, it depends, doesn't it? Because England could go the way of New Zealand and just continually evolve. And I think that's probably more likely because of their player base. Can you imagine England going through like a really bad patch in the future? I just can't see it.
They've been through so many bad patches since they won in 2003. I can definitely see it.
Yeah, but it feels like those were almost different times. I know it sounds ridiculous, but they've got a coach now who can get the best out of their players. They've got such a deep player pool. And they can just take out of the Aviva whenever they want.
I mean, that is probably the most pleasing thing, just the number of players who they've got. And you look and you think, well, Kruis and Itodji injured.
Yeah.
That's going to cause issues. Billy Vunipola injured. That's going to cause issues. Manu obviously has not even been anywhere near. Your two starting wings, Watson and Noel.
Oh, my God. This team is going to be... Actually, the only place I think they are weak is probably on the wings. But everything else is just dynamite.
Where they're weak is what you mentioned before, 12.
No, they are weak on the wings, because if you think about who they're playing against, would you rather have a George North? Would you rather have a Tim Visser? Would you rather have these bigger lads?
I'd go for Nolan Watson as my first choice wingers, and then having May, Rocco, Yard to back it up. Is not a bad position to be in at all.
Yeah, I just think they're very good wingers. I just think they're maybe a level below the absolute best in the world.
A level below Surveyor.
Yeah.
Yeah, but virtually everyone is.
Tim, you trying to talk there?
The depth is absolutely frightening. And I think a couple of things we've learned from this autumn internationals. In fact, that's a question. What did we learn from this autumn internationals? One, England can survive without Billy Vunipola. He had a shaky, as England did, had a shaky first half, but Nathan Hughes came through in the second half.
Yeah.
England can beat a team with 14 men. England can play terribly in the first half and still come through and win a tough match. Ireland can play without Johnny Sexton and still look decent.
Mm.
The depth of Ireland has actually been impressive. And I don't know how much was it they were just kind of playing with a lot of heart and spirit, and how much they have got a huge number of very talented players, because we mentioned it last week in that game against Australia, they were down to absolute bare bones and they still performed.
Yeah. I think as well, the big takeaway for me from this Autumn International are the tier twos. I said it last week, I'll say it again, that this has been the most enjoyable round of Autumn Internationals I can remember, because quite frankly I was sick of watching England play the same three teams over and over again. And some years they would just have Australia three times or Australia twice and South Africa once. I think it's great that we're finally getting to see a more varied selection of teams.
Yeah, excellent. Did you see, it's a little stat for you, the France-Australia game last week.
Go.
And the number of Fijian-born players that there were across the two teams, across the 30 men in the starting lineup.
I think there was enough for a sevens team.
There was, very appropriately, there was precisely seven, almost a quarter of the starting players.
Is that what
Fijian
they call born. a group of Fijian men? A seven.
A seven
of Fijian men. That's what biologists refer to them as. It's quite amazing, actually. Like the sheer amount of talent. And I love the fact that there's only one player contracted to the French national team itself, and that is a Fijian winger.
Yeah, Fijian-born Vakatawa. Virumi Vakatawa.
Yeah, amazing scenes.
It really is.
Do we have any other questions regarding the England game?
Not for me.
No, I have a game inspired by the England game.
Oh, yes, please, Tim.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to this, Tim.
Right. Okay. Yeah, so I've bigged this up, so I feel like I need to deliver on it. So for months and months and months, the best part of a year, in fact, I've been trying to find something that could potentially rival or even be described in the same breath as Springbok and or Nazi war criminal. This is JB's incredible invention. I've tried my best. Okay, so I have a game for you two to play, and play along as you're listening.
Oh. Go on.
Wallaby or hipster band? Is the name I'm going to give you the name of an Australian rugby union international?
Yep.
Or the name of a hipster band?
Okay.
First name I'll give you, Eden Love.
Eden Love.
Eden Love.
Interesting one, Eden Love. Go on.
Is Eden Love the name of someone who would wear chinos with a blazer after a game or order a fair trade soy milk mochaccino?
Nice. So an interesting thing about Eden Love, that was the second ever hit single for band Barista Chic. So I am going to go with hipster band.
I will then go for Wallaby.
Hang on, but there was a guy called Love, wasn't there? Who used to play?
Yeah, Eden Love. I'm going for Wallaby.
There's definitely a Valentine. Was there a Valentine?
Yeah, I think there was an Australian Valentine.
Go on,
Tim.
Eden Love was a Wallaby.
He was
a prop who had three caps in 1932.
Wow.
A vet from New South Wales.
Amazing.
Incredible.
Do you know what I miss about the 15s is when I used to go digging for hours on Google trying to find someone with the surname Pepper or something, and you find someone like Max Pepper, and you find someone from like 1930s.
Yeah.
Like, the whole Amazon story is great.
Right, next one. Darwin Dees. Is Darwin Dees someone who would call for a mark or someone who would read Karl Marx?
I'm going to go
for hipster band.
Now, I know it's a hipster band because I just saw Phil light up and he's a bit of a hipster himself. So, because he's gone hipster band, I'm going to have to go Wallaby.
Ooh. It's 2-0 to Phil.
Tim, I can tell you that you are a radar detector.
Yes, is a song. I would have played that on XFM back in the day.
What?
It's a Darwin
Dees. Darwin Dees is a Brooklyn bass skilled at mixing sunshine pop with indie attitude and lo-fi dissonance.
I hate these people.
And is known to drive audiences crazy with his offbeat Napoleon Dynamite-like dance routines.
What goes on?
Radar Detector is a genuinely very good song.
It is. Next one.
Go on.
Rex Lestrange.
Oh, hang on. Was Rex Lestrange not on our last quiz?
Is Rex Lestrange a possible second row or someone who bought a second-hand hemp throw?
Okay. That's an... I thought Rex Lestrange might be an adult entertainer of some sort. But, Rex Lestrange. Rex Lestrange.
Go on, Jay.
Wallaby. Has to be.
I will then go for hipster band.
JB's pulled one back.
Yes! Ooh.
Rex Lestrange was a centre, 16 caps in the 1970s from Brisbane.
Fair play.
Number four, I've got seven of these. Number four is Spider Hill House. Is Spider Hill House someone who'd focus on a good team exit or someone who'd cry about the unfairness of Brexit?
That's excellent.
It's got to be a hipster band. Spider Hill House, surely that cannot be a real person.
Yeah, it can't be, can it?
Surely not. Go on, Jay.
What you...
So I'm saying hipster band.
I would say hipster. No one is called Spider. Nobody. Unless he's like in part of a motorcycle gang.
Spider Hill House was a lock for the Wallabies in the 70s. Yeah.
Wow.
He was named in the great, he was in the great Aussie side that beat the great, one of the greatest ever Welsh teams of the late 70s with all their names. He beat them in a series. Spider Hillhouse was a Wallaby.
Wow. What complex.
So
web,
it's still
web
2-1 to Phil. Next one, Oz Mutant.
No, not having it. Not having it. Hipster band.
Is Oz Mutant someone who would know their way around a squat rack or have a blog devoted to life hacks?
I'm not having this. It definitely has a blog about life hacks.
I agree with JB on this one. It has to be a hipster.
It's a hipster band. A Brazilian band that mix deep electronic sounds with 60s psychedelia.
Ooh, it sounds like I could do with getting into some of that.
Not really. Not for me.
Next one, then. Landon Pig. Is Landon Pig possibly a flanker or almost certainly a wanker?
Well, they're not mutually exclusive, are they? I'm going to say Landon Pig.
Yeah.
Landon Pig. Okay. Landon Pig is a wallaby. No. No. Surname Pig. No, because obviously you can get a nickname, can't you? Like Spider. But surname's a surname.
Surname is surname.
No. Hipster band.
I'm going wallaby.
It's 2-2. Oh. To play.
Oh, wow.
3-3. It's back level. Landon Pig from Nashville, Tennessee, an indie pop rocker known for catchy hooks and licks and releasing his emotions in his songwriting.
Catchy hooks and licks. Well,
final one then. Dick Cox. Spelt D-I-C-K.
Yeah.
And then Cox, C-O-C-K-S. Is Dick Cox a fan of David Pocock's breakdown work versus France or his ethical environmental stance?
I think Dick Cox. No, that's a real Aussie. He's a wallaby.
Surely, when we were doing our Porn Star 15, we wouldn't have missed Dick Cox
or Lestrange or Rex Lestrange.
I'm going to have to go for indie band. I think I'm going to lose it on this one.
Phil, you were 2-0 up and you have lost it.
Oh. Yes, how about Phil, you scumbag?
Oh. Dick Cox, number 8 with 10 caps from New South Wales in the 70s. Australia. The one thing I've learned is there are so many more games you could play with Australian players' names because they've got players called Copper Kent, Blue Dixon, Weary Dunlop, Basil...
I mean,
Lucas, the best one I found, someone who played for Randwick, Australia, and also came over to the UK and played for Roslyn Park, Dick Tooth.
I mean, where did they get these names from? Because they are effectively just us that we put on boats and sent over there. So where did this transformation happen?
Word of warning, I just tried to look up Dick Cox by Googling him. You will not find the rugby player if you type Dick Cox into Google.
Amazing.
Phil, you're JB, you are the winner of, well, a nice catchy title, Wallaby or Wanker, but Wallaby or Hipster Band.
Wallaby or Hipster Band will do. Excellent, thank you very much.
Very good, Tim, I enjoyed that.
Pleasure.
Right, shall we move on from me winning all the points to a point-related story which came up in the news today?
We should do, yes.
The bonus points for Six Nations, boys. What do we think?
So, just to set the scene, it's a trial. Mm-hmm. It's being labelled as a trial. And they're introducing bonus points. So, the usual Northern Hemisphere bonus points, not this fancy Super Rugby thing.
Yeah.
And the only oddity is that if you win all 5 games, if you achieve a Grand Slam, you get 3 league bonus points for doing so.
Amazing.
Thereby taking out the situation where someone who wins 4 games with all the bonus points and 2 losing bonus points could potentially beat someone who won 5 games with no bonus points.
Got you. I'll tell you where I am. I like it.
Me too. I particularly like the rather elegant solution of awarding 3 bonus points for the unusual situation I just described.
Does that not feel a little bit like over-engineering to you, though?
No, it's there would be a problem there if you didn't do it.
Why?
Because someone could win if they only won 4. Well, so someone could achieve a Grand Slam and not win the title.
Well, couldn't the rule just be, the more elegant rule would be, if someone wins a Grand Slam, all bets are, all points are scrapped and they've won.
Well, that's effectively what they do, just with a nice, simple, concise, elegant solution.
The elegant one is just give them the trophy. Just give them the trophy.
But then you don't have second to sixth, and that positioning would, you'd yeah. lose all that as well. Yeah. I think it's worth pointing out that, well, no, there's two things here. Like, one, I'm a little bit of a rugby romantic.
Yeah.
And I like, my first memories of rugby were watching the old Five Nations in the 80s and watching guys like Dean Richards with his socks down playing against Scotland at Murrayfield in the Calcutta Cup, Bill McLaren on the commentary and stuff. And I quite like that it retains some of that old school feel with the only tournament in the whole of rugby anywhere in the planet that didn't have bonus points. However, the very fact it was the only tournament in the whole of rugby without bonus points, it was time, and it is time to certainly trial it, but I would say it is time to move on.
Well, I don't see any downsides to this whatsoever, really. They're just rewarding people for scoring more points, and that's not a bad thing.
No.
The one thing you could say is, with there not being home and away, with the imbalance of home and away, you're not having home and away games, it could be that in alternate years you have a much, like Italy at home, let's say, you have every yeah. other year, and on that year you might sort of think, oh, well, that's 5 points for England at Twickenham yeah. or whatever, mm-hmm. and it could impact that. That's why I think we have to look at, sit back.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Maybe 2 years of trialing it and then sit back and go, right, because the lack of home and away thing is the only bit that troubles me on it.
Let me ask you this. What is a potential downside?
Well, the home and away, it does. So each year is already unbalanced because some years you get stronger fixtures and each team gets stronger fixtures year on year.
But you simply don't know how that's going to work. I mean, you can't legislate for that.
No, and the argument is that this makes it pushes that imbalance slightly more to certain teams in different years. But I think that is a fairly weak argument.
Yeah, agreed. No, I really like it. I don't see any downside to it. Tell me this though, Tim, right?
I would just go back and say that we need to sort of sit back and look at this afterwards, because yeah. you say you don't see a downside, because Grand Slams are very, very, very rare. So well, I think the majority of the time these tournaments are going to be decided by bonus points.
I actually don't think they are that rare. I can think of 5, maybe in the last 10 years.
There's been 4 or 5, because Wales
got 3.
3 in the last... Ireland have done 1, England have done 1 in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose historically then, so weirdly, Grand Slams are quite rare.
Grand Slams are almost like 30, over 30% of the eventual results, actually.
What historically?
That'd be interesting, probably in the last 10 years. Yeah, probably
not historically.
Yeah, quite a disproportionately high amount in recent years. So, yeah, I guess so. But my guess is, if we could jump ahead 30 years in a time machine and look back, you would see quite a lot of tournaments being decided on bonus points. And again, on the year that you know, that fixtures are favouring one side more than the other. I don't know. I'm not against it. It's the only tournament that doesn't have it, so I think that's all good. There's also the element where, because it's not played over a long period of time, it's in a 6 week or 7 week block, there is the possibility where just one horrendous day's weather in Scotland, and you get a 9-6 win or whatever.
But I suppose you've got to deal with it.
Yeah.
No, I agree.
I'm probably with you then, Tim. I think it's positive. Don't see any particular downsides, but 2 year trial is probably right. Assess it after that, because the law of unintended consequences, there could be something that comes out of it that we just don't appreciate because of the fixtures.
But the one thing I think we can throw to that maybe is the biggest glimmer of hope is, what was it, the final round five in 2015?
Yeah. Yeah.
The amazing day of rugby.
Days like that.
The world's greatest day of rugby.
Yeah. It just kept getting better and better and better.
Yeah, that was incredible, actually.
I've seen people saying that with this system, you're going to get fewer days, not more days like that. And I don't see how they're coming to that conclusion.
Yeah, because the next tiebreaker after bonus points is going to be points scored anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's no real difference, is there?
Yeah.
Can you see this being used as a springboard for further changes to the Six Nations? And do you think it'd be a good idea if they did?
Possibly.
I think you know where I stand on that.
Yeah, I think we do.
Get another six teams in a, or even five teams, and make it 2 5 team leagues, and have a playoff or promotion relegation. Get Georgia, Russia, Romania, and all the rest of it.
But
get them involved.
How can you be a rugby traditionalist and then want promotion relegation?
Because, my insight there is, how much better was the 2015 World Cup than any World Cup that had gone before in terms of a whole tournament because of Georgia and Japan and Romania and Canada?
I think you're on something. Without a shadow of a doubt, you're on something. But the way it should be structured is, we kick out Italy. There's a Five Nations, which is us. There's some other Five Nations or Four Nations. And they need to keep that as a regional tournament that does not expand, does not contract, does not have promotion relegation, because that is what will create the awesome internationals, the awesome following in rugby and the World Cups, because they need the continual rivalry if it's going to be meaningful in any way.
Mm.
So there you go. I've solved all rugby problems there.
your two questions was, firstly, do you think they will? This is kind of setting the scene for more changes. I think, yeah. I think the way that
I hope not.
The way that the Six Nations have received some criticism over the past few years for exactly what Tim's describing, for not opening up, for not considering changes, they're actually using this, and this is a relatively small change, certainly compared to bringing Georgia in or promotion relegation. This is a relatively small change, so I think they are kind of opening up the idea to further changes.
I don't think so.
What those changes look like, I am not sure, and I'm still not quite sure where I sit. I can see both arguments. I do want Georgia and Romania and the rest getting more games against tier one nations.
Absolutely agreed.
But I'm not sure if messing with the Six Nations is the better way. If you get the complete revised world schedule for rugby, would it be better to ensure that each tier one nation has to play one or even two tier two nations at every calendar year?
Well, I'm glad to announce that we are not hypocrites.
Okay.
We are not hypocrites, because we are going to do our bit for tier two rugby by sticking our nose up at Six Nations and hopefully going to Bucharest for the Georgia-Romania game.
Now.
Oh, bring it.
I've had some development.
Ooh, exciting.
I've actually pulled my finger out and started researching this week. But I've not got very far.
No.
So my development is, I've done some work on it, and I cannot for the life of me find out how I can get tickets for this. So I've emailed both the European Nations Championship, the tournament organisers, and the Romanian RFU.
Yeah.
To try and just find out how the hell I can get hold of tickets. if there's someone out there who can point me in the right direction, please, please let us know at Rugby Podcast on Twitter.
Yeah.
Because we are desperate to get to this game.
Yeah. I mean, we've already got, I think, well, if you go, I think we'll be joined by at least seven other people.
there's a few people putting their hands up for this one, aren't there?
Yes, quite a few.
There's a bunch of people that have been tweeting us saying they've booked up and they're in the process of booking or arranging it or organising it.
Flights are £44.
Yeah. Flights are...
It's cheaper than the train to Cardiff. And probably quicker. And more civilised once you arrive.
Definitely more civilised.
Excellent. Right.
Shall we round up this podcast?
Yeah, let's do that.
Bye. So what I was thinking was the Lions. The Lions is going to be the biggest talking point of next year. But we're probably a little bit too early to pick a 15.
Mm.
So what I think we should do is compare our boys against the best of the New Zealanders.
Okay.
So New Zealand arguably have 6 or 7 of the best players in the world at the moment right now.
Yep.
Do we have the people who can match them?
Right.
So
can we negate their strengths?
Yes, exactly. So first one, starting in the front row, Dane Coles.
I'm going to take issue with him being the best hooker in the world. That's the first thing I'm going to do.
Because Augustine Creevy?
Augustine Creevy. Oh, I love that man.
Well, the thing about hooker, right, is it is effectively the most... what's the word for it? Most flexible position on the field. You can make hooker into whatever you want. So what you can be Harry Thacker, or you can be Richard Hibbard. And the only thing you can have in common is long hair. But they are completely different guys who do completely different jobs. So when we say, is Dane Coles the best hooker in the world? He's the best hooker in the world at running in wide channels. And that's only because of the system that New Zealand play.
Maybe he's quite possibly the best outside centre in the world.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's probably a better shout. It's hard to say.
Yeah, let's not try and get into debate.
He's immense, though. We have anyone that can stack up?
Let's not debate the definition of the best hooker in the world. He was the only...
I think if we had to pick a Lions team tomorrow, Rory Best has probably earned that jersey, hasn't he?
No, is the answer. I mean, yes and no. You can make a hell of a good argument for him because of the way that he played.
Well, this is my point. I don't think we have a standout hooker.
Yeah.
Do you know who I think could be standout with a run of games? Sean Cronin. That is the guy. I just love watching him play.
He never does anything but come off the bench. He's brilliant.
20 minutes. Brilliant. He's brilliant for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
He carries so hard. He's such an explosive player. I mean, whichever way you look at it, it's a weird way to select your team, but I'm selecting my bench first, Sean Cronin, and then someone else will start.
I think the most consistently performing hooker in the home nations for the past probably 2 years has been Jamie George.
Great shout. Great shout.
But you can't play for England because Hartley's captain, so if you get a captain...
On the international stage, you're talking, or are you just talking about what you've seen he's been playing European Cup finals, let's be fair.
Yes.
That's a pretty big stage.
He's played 2 European Cup finals in the last 3 years. He's not played as much internationally, but in overall, from all I've seen, he's the best. And he's not as good as Dane Coles, in my mind.
No.
Oh, what? Really?
No, I think you'd do a disservice to Dane Coles by simply saying but he's the best at running in outside channels because All Blacks set piece is absolutely exceptional.
Yeah, that's fair.
He can mix the tough stuff with anyone, and then he can also throw two-man missed passes.
Maybe I'm guilty of Cristiano Ronaldo's syndrome here.
Go on.
Which is, Cristiano Ronaldo is so good at using his feet, people forget he's an excellent header of the ball.
Yes.
And Dane Coles is so excellent at running in those wide channels that maybe I've overlooked everything else.
Yes. He's absolutely immense, and he is someone that is a game winner, game breaker, and we really need to watch him. But we don't have anyone in that position who can come close. The next one, I think you're probably going to mention Phil. I might think a bit differently. What you got?
I was going to go for Brodie Retallick.
Interesting. A lot of people think this guy is the best lock in the world.
Winner of the World Player of the Year 2 years ago.
Yep,
and he is
the golden age of locks. And he is considered the best.
We are he in is the golden best. Age. But yes, he is the best, I think. We are in the
he
golden
was
age
so
of locks,
amazing so. Against Ireland in Dublin.
I don't know. Yes. The only thing I'll say is maybe he is the best, but I think the margins are so slim between him and the rest of the pack.
Well, who is the rest of the pack? Who have we got? Who's our number one today?
Atoji, Cruis, Alan Wynne-Jones, Gray,
Hendo.
Hendo.
Toner's playing exceptionally well.
Toner's Launchbury.
Well, the four locks I would take if we were picking a Lions squad today would be Crotogy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alan Wynn and Johnny Gray.
And so Launchbury? Launchbury misses out.
Oh, Launchbury misses out. Oh, I might even swap out Wynn. Yeah. Then Devon Toner. God.
And Law. I thought Laws was very close to be a man of the match.
Yeah.
For he England, was, Australia. Yeah. He was exceptional.
So... It's a, I mean, you've got to base it around Itoji and Cruis. You've just got to. And then you've got to take Alan Wynn.
Yeah.
That has to happen.
I completely agree with all of that.
Then what happens?
I don't know, because you've then got four other players fighting for one more spot.
Yeah.
And so, I think that means, by the very nature of it, we can compete, but we don't have someone as quite as good. But the gap is very, very close.
Yeah.
I completely agree. Yeah, I don't think there's much in it at all.
Where are you going next?
Kieran Reid would be my next one. So I don't think he's quite shown the form this year as he has in previous years, but he's still probably the best number 8 in the world.
I think we have Big Billy, Jamie Heaslip, Talupe Faletau at the moment doesn't get in my matchday squad.
Oh,
I think the reason he
doesn't get in is because you haven't seen him for a while. And when he plays,
yeah, exactly.
And you realise, like, oh my God, this guy's amazing. Billy has to be, if he is anything like the Billy that just got injured, has to be the starter.
Agreed.
And if he is the starter, I think he might be better. So this is the thing. This is when you kind of realise that New Zealand are playing a different game to everyone else, because all the players that we're picking do so many different things to the players that have been picked against.
Yeah, yeah, Kieran Reid's going to be out there in the 15-metre channel.
So,
you know,
this is interesting.
Playing a supporting runner role or a wide channel ball carrier with Dane Coles.
It does feel like every All Black we mention it belongs in the 15-metre channel. It begs the question, who on earth stays in the middle of the field for? Maybe that's where we should attack.
maybe Gatland ball is the way to go. Just yeah. Right out the middle.
So I'm with you. Billy, if he can get back to the form pre-injury, has to be the starter. And you've got a hell of a couple of backups in, because Heaslip's form at the moment is brilliant.
It is.
Faletau is a hell of a player. So I don't think we're far off there either.
Aaron Smith? Is that the next one?
Aaron Smith or TJ Perenara, because TJ Perenara started the France game and Smith's form hasn't been good, but you've got two of the best nines in the world.
Your boy Connor will do him there,
Connor will do him. Connor is just... He's just great.
So... The home nation's nine, you've got Connor, who has been magnificent.
Mm-hmm.
Ben Youngs has also been magnificent.
Yep.
Reece Webb, he's injured, hasn't really shown the form. And Laidlaw, who I'm not sure if you'd take him. You might take him for his leadership.
No,
of the
you don't do that.
Team.
You don't do that. I think we've learned you don't take players or people on tour who can't contribute on the field.
So
exactly, and here's one contribution from a scrum half. If you need someone to knock over a last minute drop goal, that's why we've got to take Danny Kerr.
Yeah.
Do you see his first touch of the ball? He tried a drop goal in the England Australia game.
No, I had no idea that he did this.
I don't even think
horrendous drop goal.
I don't think
he
made the try line.
It was awful. He even bobbed out a tweet just taking the mickey out of himself for his drop goal, to be fair to him. But I think we've got to eat a little bit of humble pie on Ben Youngs, because it was in June, back in June, when we were doing the podcasts with Green and Gold, and they were saying that Ben Youngs is one of the players they really feared, and we all sort of, really?
Laughed, scoffed.
Ben Youngs?
Yeah, I don't... I'm assuming the cliff is coming, because this has been his career to date. Good, bad, good, good, bad, 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 good. And like, you think, oh, Ben Youngs is done now. They're not going to pick him again. And then he gets picked again. But you can't argue with his form. He has been superb.
Yeah, again. And this is really... So you've got Youngs and Connor Murray against Aaron Smith and TJ Perenara.
Well, if you're going to take Connor Murray and you want to play that way, you've got to take a backup who can basically back him up.
Like Mike Phillips.
Correct. How did you know that was going there?
I knew that was coming.
So, again, I don't think we're far behind.
Late bolter on that one. Ben Spencer.
Very late bolter.
That is
That's 4 years too early.
I'd like to see him in the squad.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I'd like to see him in the England squad.
No, would
first.
You really? Wouldn't you rather see Dan Robson in the squad?
Oh, yeah, no. That's a good point. Or even Joe Simpson.
No, I think they'll probably skip those guys and go straight to Spencer.
Well, Joe Simpson, he was in the England squad for the 2011 World Cup.
Was he?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think they'll go straight past them. They'll go to Spencer. Because he can kick better than Laidlaw, allegedly. He's very fast.
He gassed Mike Haley two yeah. weeks ago.
He's remarkably fast. And he's only going to be growing and growing and growing. And, you know, he might...
But he's not going to be playing... Warren Gatland will pick from players that are involved in the Six Nations.
Yeah, he won't be in the Lions.
And the Six Nations and European... We had a chat with Will Greenwood, didn't we, at the Canterbury Lions launch, and he said, you have to be playing in the Six Nations or you must be playing... And no, he said, and... You must be playing in the latter stages of the European Cup. That's where the selections will be made.
Yeah, all it takes is an injury to say Wigglesworth, and then he's in that Saracens team. Well, they've got two. Yeah. They've got two coaches there who are ex-Saracens in the England setup. It's not a million miles away from this actually happening.
And if, say, Reece Webb is injured, and you want a wild card nine, someone who can run the game, run the ball, mind you, then you just go for Robson or Simpson. Yeah.
Yeah, you sure?
Pretty sure. Pretty sure.
And plus, as you say, if fit, Reece Webb does that job brilliantly.
Yes.
So.
Reece Webb is exceptional.
Yeah. And Danny Kerr's in the England squad and he kind of does that job as well.
So we're saying we're not far off at nine. Then last two positions I wanted to talk about. 10. Bowden Barrett, World Player of the Year, top point scorer in Super Rugby, Player of the Series in New Zealand's tour, Player of the Rugby Championship.
When did this guy get good?
Last couple of seasons, he's got real good.
Hasn't he just? Yeah, but this good. I mean, we always knew he was good. We always knew he was going to be backing up Carter and, you know, he kind of took a back seat.
No, I don't think we did. I don't think everyone automatically went, oh, it's going to be Bowden Barrett. I think a lot of people went, oh, they've got Bowden Barrett. They've got Aaron Cruden. They've got Sopawanga. I think people were thinking between the three of them, this could be a bit difficult post World Cup.
No, I just thought it'd be Cruden. I thought Cruden would be the starting 10, basically for the next generation. But no, completely wrong. Barrett, it's just incredible. No one can play like Barrett.
I agree.
People can do bits of what he can do. There are definitely better kickers, but no one has his all-round game.
I would say all-round game, apart from I do have a couple of question marks over his game management. Particularly in that defeat by Ireland in Chicago. He was put under a lot of pressure, and I think he did flake a little bit. Not a lot, but there were cracks there, and he didn't get them in the right places, and he didn't play the smart rugby. He was trying to run it from everywhere, so...
Albeit he didn't have a settled centre pairing outside him. But...
Yeah, he had a completely injuries during the game and before the game.
The most impressive thing about Barrett, which is a weird thing to say about a fly half, is probably his strength and his power. I mean, he's incredibly powerful.
His gas is unreal.
Yeah, I mean, gas really is unreal.
I mean, how often have you seen him just, you know, put a hand in someone's chest and go?
Yeah.
I don't think there's many international wingers as quick.
No, I think you're probably right.
Yeah, we don't have anyone like Barrett.
He's scarily fast. And that negativity for me, that is a minor hint of a question mark. All his positives are truly exceptional.
Something did happen this week which makes me think there is a plan to unsettle him.
Okay.
James Hook went to the Ospreys. So that should unsettle him massively.
Okay.
Well, because that obviously means the Ospreys are preparing to lose a fly half. Now, if they lose... Davis, well, that's no good. And he's probably on less money. So my bet is they're going to lose Bigger. Now, if Bigger was to go to the same club as, say, Bowden Barrett, he would unseat him immediately. That is the plan.
New Zealand Rugby simply would not let that happen. They know the consequences.
Well, I mean, I think that's what they're up to.
It's a union... The Canes are a union-controlled club. There is no way that New Zealand Rugby...
But it's that Bigger... And then he would.
But then again, Phil. Maybe they're thinking we need to get Bowden Barrett ready for the Lions, and they've heard about this Bigger thing, and they actually want to want to make sure he's up to the challenge by sending bigger there as a challenge.
Exactly. So in case anyone's listening to this, what on earth are they talking about? My theory is Dan Bigger will unseat any fly half that you put in the same club as him. So he's gone through Hook, he's gone through Henson, he's gone through everyone. And now they're going to ship him off to the Canes to unnerve Beauden Barrett. Hear me now, believe me later. I know about these things. What are you doing?
Okay.
Finally. Back three.
Go on.
Well, so I think the answer is we don't have anyone remotely close.
No. Who,
just out of interest, name your Lions 10 for a test match next weekend. Go.
If everyone's fit and firing... Until very recently, I would have said Johnny Sexton. I'm now falling on Owen Farrell.
I'm with you, Phil. I've just written that down on a bit of paper in front of me here, because I'd quite fancy having Henshaw as the 12.
The problem with Farrell is, like, it's the same problem with Faletau. I've not seen him play international for quite a while.
At ten. Yeah.
And yes, I think you're probably right, but the draw of Sexton is just too much.
Yeah.
Sexton for me.
Yeah, Sexton, or bigger. Is still... It's a tough one. And finally then, back three.
Okay.
So I think New Zealand's first choice would be Smith, Dagg and Surveyor. Can we compete?
Smith, Dagg, Surveyor. Right. So...
My back three, if I was picking it today, would be... Stuart Hogg, Tommy Seymour, Liam Williams.
Ooh.
I would go...
What would yours be? I think the short answer is no, we don't.
No, I think we do. So, Surveyor, as far as I'm concerned, I keep saying this. Well, I used to say it until he had one amazing game against France.
He's had a few amazing games.
Yeah, but the game against France was like Surveyor. Surveyor played like everyone spoke about him. After that, if you look at most of his highlights, he's just running in tries unopposed. I actually think he can be a little unnerved. So I'm not that worried about Surveyor. Watch him score five tries now against Lions. I think the most impressive guy of those three is Israel Dagg. I think Israel Dagg is absolutely superb. You can counter what... In fact, I'd say George North is probably as good as Surveyor, if not better, when he's winning.
Which incarnation of George North, though?
Good question.
George North from the Lions 2013. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Israel Dagg, I think, is a fairly unique talent. Ben Smith is like a really good Mike Brown.
Ben Smith.
I think Ben Smith is actually better than Israel Dagg, hence why he's wearing the 15, not the 14 shirt in the big games.
Mm.
Who would your back three be, Phil? If you had to pick today. No hint of concussion or... There was no concussion anyway. Go on.
Hogg, Liam Williams, and probably Anthony Watson.
Oh, Anthony Watson's a great shout. Oh,
interesting.
Because Anthony Watson's pretty much more athletic and faster than pretty much anyone. And in fact, if you really want to throw a spanner in the works, send Wade. No one's touching him.
He told last time,
didn't
he?
He did, yeah.
Oh, he got called up.
Who would your back three? Because me and Phil are united on two out of the three selections then. And no George North in either of ours.
So the problem is, what would I pick compared to what is going to be picked? I'd always take Alex Goode. Always.
Starting.
Starting
Goode.
The test match. I would always
pick Alex Goode.
Okay.
Because Alex Goode is just a phenomenal rugby player. George North, that's a bit weak, actually. Do you know what? I don't know. No. Maybe Watson. Maybe. And definitely not Halfpenny. Maybe Liam Williams on the other wing. I'm not very confident. Liam Williams, Goode, and if George North gets back to some sort of form, George North. Yeah.
I think what we're saying is, no, we probably can't compete, or certainly we're not as close as some of the other positions.
No, we're not, actually. That's a good point. Just so you know, I tried to pick my Lions backs. Okay, it is so hard. So this is how you pick the Lions in my mind. They have a set number of places for each position. So like two fullbacks,
yeah.
three wingers, four centres,
yeah.
two fly halves, and that's it.
Yeah, okay.
And then you have three additional spaces for wild cards.
Yeah,
and you just list the players and see if you can pick that team. It is so difficult.
Yeah.
So they go.
We'll be doing that at some point in the future. Probably not for a while.
I've done mine. Ready?
I've done mine.
Hear me now, believe me later. That is the squad.
I'll just McGrath, Best, Furlong, Critoggi, Robshaw, O'Brien, Vunipola, Murray, Farrell, Henshaw. Don't have an outside centre. Williams, Seymour, Hogg. Oh. That's my 15. If I was picking it this weekend. But anyway.
Interesting.
Save it for another time.
There we go then. Shall we wrap this up?
Let's wrap it up.
I'll tell you what, I'll ask you one question because I've just found just another little bit of a teaser for you. So I've just found this little stat on... So statistically, players get a score based on their work, the involvements they have, the meters, the tackles. Every player gets a score. So the man of the match for the game was Jonathan Joseph, who will, you know, presumably poured bottles, cases of champagne all over the floor on Saturday night.
Yeah.
No doubt. He was the top ranked player. I want you to see if you can get the other four players in that match that were in the top five.
Are they all are the England players all from both teams?
It's all 46 players that were involved were eligible for this. So just take it in turns and there's four spots. See who can get the most out of the top four. In fact, I'll do six, so then there's five, so then there could be a 3-2, so there'll be a winner.
Okay.
So take it in turns. Phil, as you lost the first game, you can go first here.
Okay, I'll go for an easy one. Has to be Israel Folau.
No.
What?
No.
Right, repeat this question.
Statistically, players get a score. You know how, like, it's not Opta, but you know how, like, Opta give players a score based on their involvements in the game, so they combine everything.
Positive contributions.
Positive contributions, and it's weighted differently for different positions to account for the fact that fullbacks will make more yards than a front row player, etc.
Got it. So Kepu scored the highest.
Kepu came in seventh, so what? He was outside the top six. Unlucky. Phil, back to you.
Let's go for the try scorers then, because all we know is Joseph scored two and he's in there. So Ben Youngs
is four. He's fourth.
So that's one point Phil, to me.
1 point for Phil. So there's still second, third, fifth and sixth.
Bernard Foley.
No.
What?
Another try scorer. Naivalu.
No.
Cruis?
No.
Oh.
Nathan Hughes.
Third.
So
another 2-0 point to me.
Phil. So there's second, fifth and sixth in the statistically best players on the field.
Pocock. No. Pocock.
No.
What? What kind of quiz is this?
I'm surprised because you mentioned someone that you thought was close to being man of the match.
Oh, so my go.
Yeah.
Courtney Laws.
Courtney Laws second.
3-0.
Only narrowly edged out by Jonathan Joseph for the man of the match on the stats.
Yeah, he was very impressive.
I've got something very sad to tell you about stats, Tim.
There are lies, damn lies and statistics.
No, sadder. We met a guy from Opta at Sale. Really nice fella, really good chap. I was like, how do you measure the yards? And I assumed there'd be like laser pointers everywhere and like lots of people with like, you know, pointy heads.
Well, just the GPS. GPS can tell you exactly how many yards you've moved forward.
Well, it's not like that. And do you know what the answer was?
What?
We just know.
we just estimate it.
Yeah.
It looks like he ran 5 yards there.
So, Opta.
Do you know, for my... I once helped, funnily enough, it was Joe Alab. He was doing his dissertation at Bath Uni on the ground covered by rugby union players. And I helped him out and set up a load of, a load of markers all round the pitch at the rec to configure, what's that word where you set up,
I know, calibrate.
calibrate, yeah, to calibrate the cameras so that it would understand what distance is, so that then you could track players' movements specifically. And if Joe Alabd can do that for his university dissertation, yeah, Opta can do it for official stats.
You were in the University of Bath, Tim, with like the best sports department, I think, in the world or something. It is ridiculous there.
The other thing that truly, truly disappointed me, this was at the Sale Exeter game, and after the game he was on his laptop, and JB asked him, how many penalties did Sale give away? Did they give away loads more? He said, I don't know. I can find out, though. Starts tapping away on his computer, and I was expecting him to plug directly into the mainframe. to be like The Matrix with numbers flying everywhere. No, he just went to Google, went to ESPN Rugby, and looked on there. What a letdown.
So what on earth? Like, you got to start thinking then, like, Who is keeping the... Where is the magic actually happening? Is it ESPN?
Also says to me that if I really, really wanted to win in fantasy rugby, I could engineer myself winning by somehow finding the person who fills this thing in.
Oh, mate.
Well, just completely fabricate the numbers.
Hang on, well, what about our class action lawsuits? From everyone that plays fantasy rugby draft, taking Opta to the cleaners, particularly when there's money on it.
Well, I did, while you weren't listening, Jay, I did offer him £20 if he took down Mike Haley's meters made and defenders beaten.
Wow. Corruption at the highest level.
Outrage. Anyway, to conclude the statistical thing, the top player was Jonathan Joseph, second was Courtney Laws, third Nathan Hughes, fourth Ben Youngs, fifth Tom Wood, who, again, there were question marks over him, and he did show up really well. Sixth, George Ford. It wasn't until Sakopi Kepu, number seven, that an Australian featured, and just sort of says in that second half just how dominant England were.
Agreed. Yeah.
Good times.
Cool.
Very good.
Right, do you want to wrap it up then, Tim?
I'll wrap it up, yeah. I will say that this is only part one of this week's podcasting, because in this feed where you're listening to this right now, you're going to get a midweek domestic podcast, which will be looking at all of the matches from the Aviva Premiership. And more importantly, or equally importantly, we'll be looking ahead to a massive weekend of European action. Those internationals aren't going to have any breathers. They're going to get straight back into some massive, massive matches. So we'll be previewing that and getting right into that. I would just say thank you very much for listening once again. Give us your thoughts and feedback at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. Leave your 5-star reviews and a comment, and we can mention it on the next podcast when it's coming your way. And top work, I reckon. I think, should we play out with that advert one more time?
Yeah, why not? It's good fun, isn't it?
It's beautiful. It's brilliant fun. And for any Englishman, it just brings an extra smile to your face. And for every Aussie, it's just a little bit more humble pie being shoved down your throat.
Let's just finish with the laughing, shall we? Right. See you on Wednesday, boys.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince.
I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.